Chapter 8. Clean Shirts. A dockmaster's sky, it was called. Those gray clouds blotting out the sun, temperamental and sullen. Perhaps the others, here in the camp just outside of Tarvalen, hadn't noticed the persistent clouds, but Swan had. No sailor would miss them. Not dark enough to promise a storm, not light enough to imply smooth waters either. A sky like that was ambiguous. You could set out and never see a drop of rain or a hint of storm winds, or with barely a moment's notice you could find yourself in the middle of a squall. It was deceitful, that blanket of clouds. Most ports charged a daily fee to each vessel moored in their harbors, but on days of storm, when no fisher could make a catch, the fee would be halved, or spared entirely. On a day like this, however, when there were gloomy clouds but no proof of storms, the dockmasters would charge a full day's rent. And so the fisher had to make a choice. Stay in the harbor and wait, or go fishing to recoup the dock fees. Most days like this didn't turn stormy. Most days like this were safe. But if a storm did come on a day like this, it tended to be very bad. Many of the most terrible tempests in history had sprung from a dockmaster's sky. That's why some fishers had another name for clouds like those. They called them a lionfish's veil. And it had been days since the sky had offered anything different. Swan shivered, pulling her shawl close. It was a bad sign. She doubted many fishers had chosen to go out this day. "Swan," Lilaine asked, voice tinged with annoyance. "Do hurry up, and I don't want to hear any more superstitious nonsense about the sky. Honestly." The tall Aes Sedai turned away and continued along the walk. "Superstitious?" Swan thought indignantly. "A thousand generations of wisdom isn't superstition. It's good sense." But she said nothing and hurried after Lilaine. Around her, the camp of Aes Sedai loyal to Egwene continued its daily activities, as steady as a clock's gears. If there was one thing Aes Sedai were good at, it was creating order. Tents were arranged in clusters by Aja, as if to imitate the White Tower's layout. There were few men, and most of those who passed, soldiers on errands from Gareth Bryn's armies, grooms caring for horses, were quick to be about their duties. They were far outnumbered by worker women, many of whom had gone so far as to embroider the pattern of the Flame of Tarvalen on their skirts or bodices. One of the only oddities about the village, if one ignored the fact that there were tents instead of rooms and wooden walkways instead of tiled hallways, was the number of novices. There were hundreds and hundreds. In fact, the number had to be over 1,000 now, many more than the tower had held in recent memory. Once the Aes Sedai were reunited, novices' quarters that hadn't been used in decades would have to be reopened. They might even need the second kitchen. These novices bustled around in families, and most of the Aes Sedai tried to ignore them. Some did this out of habit. Who paid attention to novices? But others did so out of displeasure. By their estimation, women aged enough to be mothers and grandmothers, indeed many who were mothers and grandmothers, shouldn't have been entered into the novice book. But what could be done? Egwene Alvear, the Ammerlin seat, had declared that it should happen. Swan could still sense shock in some of the Aes Sedai she passed. Egwene was to have been carefully controlled. What had gone wrong? When had the Ammerlin gotten away from them? Swan would have taken more smug delight from those looks if she hadn't herself worried about Egwene's continued captivity in the White Tower. That was a lionfish's veil indeed, potential for great success, but also for great disaster. She hurried after Lilaine. "What is the status of the negotiations?" Lilaine asked, not bothering to look at Swan. "You could go to one of the sessions yourself and find out," Swan thought. But Lilaine wanted to be seen supervising, not taking an active hand. And asking Swan in the open was also a calculated move. Swan was known as one of Egwene's confidants and still carried some measure of notoriety for having been Ammerlin herself, The things Swan said to Lelaine weren't important. Being seen saying them, however, increased the woman's influence in camp. "They don't go well, Lelaine," Swan said. "Elida's emissaries never promise anything, and seem indignant any time we raise important topics, like reinstating the Blue Aja. I doubt they have any real authority from Elida to make binding agreements." "Hmm," Lelaine said thoughtfully, nodding to a group of novices. They bobbed into curtsies. In a shrewd decision, Lelaine had begun talking very acceptingly of the new novices. Romanda's dislike of them was well known. Now that Egwene was gone, Romanda had begun to imply that once reconciliation was achieved, this foolishness with the aged novices would have to be dealt with swiftly. However, more and more of the other sisters were seeing Egwene's wisdom. There was great strength among the new novices, and not a few would be raised to accept it the moment the White Tower was achieved. Recently, by offering tacit acceptance of these women, Lelaine had given herself yet another tie to Egwene. Swan eyed the retreating family of novices. They had curtsied to Lelaine almost as quickly and deferentially as they would have to the Ammerlin. It was becoming clear that after months at a stalemate, Lelaine was winning the battle against Romanda for superiority. And that was a very large problem. Swan didn't dislike Lelaine. She was capable, strong-willed, and decisive. They had been friends once, though their relationship had changed drastically with Swan's changed position. Yes, she might say she liked Lelaine, but she didn't trust the woman, and she particularly didn't want to see her as Ammerlin. In another era, Lelaine would have done well in the position, but this world needed Egwene, and friendship or not, Swan couldn't afford to let this woman displace the rightful Ammerlin, and she had to make certain Lelaine wasn't taking action to prevent Egwene's return. "Well," Lelaine said, "we shall have to discuss the negotiations in the hall. The Ammerlin wants them to continue, so we certainly can't let them stop. Yet there must be a way to make them effective. The Ammerlin's desires must be seen to, wouldn't you say?" "Undoubtedly," Swan replied flatly. Lelaine eyed her, and Swan cursed herself for letting her emotions show. Lelaine needed to believe that Swan was on her side. "I'm sorry, Lelaine. That woman has me in a fury. Why does Elida hold talks if she won't concede a single point?" Lelaine nodded. "Yes, but who can say why Elida does what she does? The Ammerlin's reports indicate that Elida's leadership of the Tower has been erratic, at best." Swan simply nodded. Fortunately, Lelaine didn't seem to suspect Swan's disloyalty, or she didn't care about it. It was remarkable how innocuous the women thought Swan was, now that her power had been so greatly reduced. Being weak was a new experience. From her very early days in the White Tower, sisters had noted her strength and her sharpness of mind. Whispers of her becoming Ammerlin had begun almost immediately. At times it seemed that the pattern itself had pushed Swan directly into the seat. Though her hasty ascent to Ammerlin while so young had come as a surprise to many, she herself had not been shocked. When you fished with squid as bait, you shouldn't be surprised to catch fangfish. If you wanted to catch eels, you used something else entirely. When she'd first been healed, her reduced power had been a disappointment, but that was changing. Yes, it was infuriating to be beneath so many, to lack respect from those around her. However, because she was weaker in power, many seemed to assume she was weaker in political skill as well. Could people really forget so quickly? She was finding her new status among the Aes Sedai to be liberating. "Yes," Lelaine said as she nodded to another group of novices. "I believe that it is time to send envoys to the kingdoms that Al-Thor hasn't conquered. We may not hold the White Tower itself, but that is no reason to abandon our political stewardship of the world." "Yes, Lelaine," Swan said. "But are you certain that Romanda won't argue against that?" "Why would she?" Lelaine said dismissively. "It wouldn't make sense." Little Ramonda does make sense, Swan said. I think she disagrees just to spite you. But I did see her chatting with Maralenda earlier in the week. Lilaine frowned. Maralenda was a distant cousin to the Trakand line. Swan covered a smile. It was amazing how much you could accomplish when people dismissed you. How many women had she dismissed because they lacked visible power? How often had she been manipulated, much as she now manipulated Lilaine? I shall look into it, Lilaine said. It didn't matter what she discovered. As long as she was kept busy worrying about Ramonda, she wouldn't be able to spend as much time stealing power from Egwene. Egwene. The Amyrlin needed to hurry up and finish with her plotting in the White Tower. What good would it do to undermine Elida if the Aes Sedai outside crumbled while Egwene wasn't watching? Swan could only keep Ramonda and Lilaine distracted for so long, particularly now that Lilaine held such a distinct advantage. Light. Some days she felt that she was trying to juggle buttered live silver pike. Swan checked the position of the sun behind that dark master's sky. It was late afternoon. Fish guts, she muttered. I'll need to be going, Lilaine. Lilaine glanced at her. You have washing, I presume, for that ruffian of a general of yours?
He's not a ruffian,
Swan snapped, then cursed herself. She'd lose much of her advantage if she kept snapping at those who thought themselves her betters. Lilaine smiled, eyes twinkling as if she knew something special. Insufferable woman! Friend or not, Swan had half a mind to wipe... No. I apologize, Lilaine, Swan forced out. I get on edge thinking of what that man demands of me. Yes, Lilaine said, down-turning her lips. I've considered on this, Swan. The Amyrlin may have suffered Bryn's bullying of a sister, but I won't stand for it. You're one of my attendants now. One of your attendants? Swan thought. I thought that I was just supposed to support you until Egwene returned. Yes, Lilaine mused. I should think it's time to put an end to your servitude to Bryn. I shall pay off your debt, Swan. Pay off my debt? Swan said, feeling a moment of panic. Is that wise? Not that I wouldn't mind being free of that man, of course. But my position offers me quite useful opportunities for listening in on his plans. Plans? Lilaine asked, frowning. Swan cringed inwardly. The last thing she wanted was to imply wrongdoing on Bryn's part. Light, the man was strict enough to make warders look sloppy in keeping their oaths. She should just let Lilaine end this foolish servitude. But the thought made her stomach churn. Bryn was already disappointed that she'd broken her oath to him months before. Well, she hadn't broken that oath. She'd just postponed her period of service. But try convincing the stubborn fool of that fact. If she took the easy way out now, what would he think of her? He'd think that he'd won, that she'd proven herself unable to keep her word. There was no way she'd let that happen. Besides, she wasn't about to let Lilaine be the one who freed her. That would just move her debt from Bryn to Lilaine. The Aes Sedai would collect it in far more subtle ways, but each coin would end up being paid one way or another, if only through demands of loyalty. Lilaine, Swan said softly, I don't suspect the good general of anything. However, he controls our armies. Can you really be trusted to do as required without any supervision? Lilaine sniffed. I'm not certain any man can be trusted without direction. I hate doing his laundry, Swan said. Well, she did, even if she wouldn't be stopped from doing it for all of the gold in Tarvalen. But if the duty keeps me close with a listening ear... Yes, Lilaine said, nodding slowly. Yes, I see that you are right. I will not forget your sacrifice, Swan. Very well. You are dismissed. Lilaine turned, glancing down at her hand as if longing for something, probably wishing for the day when, as Amyrlin, she could offer her great serpent ring for a kiss when she parted ways with another sister. light, but Egwene needed to return soon. Buttered silver pike. Buttered flaming silver pike. Swan made her way toward the edge of the Aes Sedai camp. Bryn's army surrounded the Aes Sedai camp in a large ring, but she was on the far side of the ring from Bryn. It would take a good half hour to walk to his command post. Fortunately, she found a wagon driver who was taking a load of supplies brought through a gateway to the army. The short, grizzled man immediately agreed to let her ride with the turnips, though he did seem puzzled why she didn't go get a horse, as befitted an Aes Sedai station. Well, it wasn't that far, and riding with vegetables was a fate far less undignified than being forced to jounce around on the back of a horse. If Gareth Bryn wanted to complain about her tardiness, then he'd get an earful, he would. She settled back against a lumpy sack of turnips, brown-skirted legs hanging over the back of the wagon. As the cart rolled up a slight incline, she could see over the Aes Sedai camp, with its white tents and city-like organization. Ringed around it was the army, with smaller tents in neat straight lines, and ringed around them was a growing ring of camp followers. Beyond it all, the landscape was brown, the winter snows melted, but spring sprouts scarce. The countryside was pocketed with thickets of scrub oak. Shadows in valleys and twisting lines of chimney smoke pointed to distant villages. It was surprising how familiar, how welcome these grasslands felt. When she had first come to the White Tower, she'd been sure she'd never come to love this landlocked countryside. Now she had lived much more of her life in Tar Valon than she had in Tyr. It was difficult at times to recall that girl who had sewn nets and gone on early morning trawling trips with her father. She'd become something else, a woman who traded in secrets rather than fish. Secrets, those powerful, dominating secrets. They had become her life. No love save for youthful dalliances, no time for entanglements or much room for friendships. She'd focused on only one thing, finding the dragon reborn, helping him, guiding him, hopefully controlling him. Moiraine had died following that same quest, but at least she had been able to go out and see the world. Swan had grown old, in spirit if not in body, cooped up in the tower, pulling her strings and nudging the world. She'd done some good. Time would tell if those efforts had been enough. She didn't regret her life. Yet at this moment, passing army tents, holes and broken ruts in the path, shaking the cart, making it rattle like dried fish bones in a kettle, she envied Moiraine. How often had Swan bothered to look out of her window toward the beautiful green landscape before it all had started going sickly? She and Moiraine had fought so hard to save this world, but they had left themselves without anything to enjoy in it. Perhaps Swan had made a mistake in staying with the Blue, unlike Lyanna, who had taken the opportunity in their stilling and healing to change to the green Aja. No, Swan thought, wagon rattling, smelling of bitter turnips. No, I'm still focused on saving this blasted world. There would be no switching to the green for her. Though, thinking of Bryn, she did wish that the Blue were a little more like the green in certain ways. Swan the Ammerlin hadn't had any time for entanglements, but what of Swan the Attendant? Guiding people with quiet manipulations required a lot more skill than bullying them with the power of the Ammerlin seat, and it was proving more fulfilling. But it also left her without the crushing weight of responsibility she'd felt during her years leading the White Tower. Was there, perhaps, room in her life for a few more changes? The wagon reached the far side of the army camp, and she shook her head at her own foolishness as she hopped down, then nodded her thanks to the wagon driver. Was she a girl, barely old enough for her first full-day blackfish trawl? There was no use in thinking of Bryn that way. At least not right now. There was too much to do. She walked along the perimeter of the camp, army tents to her left. It was growing dark, and lanterns burning precious oil illuminated disorganized shanties and tents to her right. Ahead of her, a small circular palisade rose on the army side. It didn't enclose the entire army. In fact, it was only big enough for several dozen officer tents, and some larger command tents. It was to act as a fortification in an emergency, but always as a center of operations. Bryn felt it good to have a physical barrier separating the larger camp from the place where he held conference with his officers. With the confusion of the civilian camp, and with such a long border to patrol, it would be too easy for spies to approach his tents otherwise. The palisade was only about 3/4 done, but the work was progressing quickly. Perhaps he would choose to surround the entire army eventually, if the siege continued long enough. For now, Bryn felt that the small fortified command post would not only suggest security to the soldiers, but also lend them a sense of authority. The 8-foot wooden stakes rose from the ground ahead, a line of sentinels standing side by side, points raised to the sky. While holding a siege, one generally had a lot of manpower for work like this. The guards at the palisade gate knew to let her pass, and she quickly made her way to Bryn's tent. She did have washing to do, but most of it would probably have to wait until the morning. She was supposed to meet Egwene in Tel Iron Riad as soon as it grew dark, and the glow of the sunset was already beginning to fade. Bryn's tent, as usual, shone with only a very faint light. While people outside squandered their oil, he scrimped. Most of his men lived better than he did. Fool man. Swan pushed her way into the tent without calling. If he was foolish enough to change without going behind the screen, then he was foolish enough to be seen doing it. He was seated at his desk, working by the light of a solitary candle. He appeared to be reading scout reports. Swan sniffed, letting the tent flaps droop closed behind her. Not a single lamp. That man! You will ruin your eyes reading by such poor light, Gareth Bryn.
I have read by the light of a single candle for most of my life, Swan, he said, turning over a page and not looking up. And I'll have you know that my eyesight is the same as it was when I was a boy.
Oh, Swan said. So you're saying that your eyesight was poor to begin with? Bryn grinned, but continued his reading. Swan sniffed again, loudly, to make sure he heard. Then she wove a globe of light and sent it hovering over beside his desk. Fool man. She wouldn't have him going so blind he fell in battle to an attack he didn't see. After setting the light beside his head, perhaps too close for him to be comfortable with it without scooting over, she walked over to pluck clothing off the drying line she'd strung across the center of the tent. He'd voiced no complaint about her using the inside of his tent for drying laundry, and hadn't taken it down. That was a disappointment. She'd been anticipating chastising him for that.
A woman from the camp outside approached me today, Bryn said, shifting his chair to the side, then picking up another stack of pages. She offered me laundry service. She's organizing a group of washwomen in the camp, and she claimed that she could do my wash more quickly and effectively than a single distracted maidservant could.
Swan froze, sparing a glance at Bryn, who was looking through his papers. His strong jaw was lit on the left by the even white light of her globe, and on the right by the flickering orange candlelight. Some men were made weak by age. Others were made to look tired or slovenly. Bryn had simply become distinguished, like a pillar crafted by a master stonemason, then left to the elements. Age hadn't reduced Bryn's effectiveness or his strength. It had simply given him character, dusting his temples with silver, creasing his firm face with lines of wisdom. "And what did you tell this woman?" she asked. Bryn turned a page over.
"I told her that I was satisfied with my laundry." He looked up at her. "I have to say, Swan, that I'm surprised. I had assumed that an Aes Sedai would know little of work such as this. But rarely have my uniforms known such a perfect combination of stiffness and comfort. You are to be commended."
Swan turned away from him, hiding her blush. Fool man! She had caused kings to kneel before her. She manipulated the Aes Sedai and planned for the deliverance of mankind itself. and he complimented her on her laundering skills? The thing was, from Bryn, that was an honest and meaningful compliment. He didn't look down on washwomen or on runner boys. He treated all with equity. A person didn't gain stature in Gareth Bryn's eyes by being a king or queen. One gained stature by keeping to one's oaths and doing one's duty. To him, a compliment on laundry well done was as meaningful as a medal awarded to a soldier who had stood his ground before the enemy. She glanced back at him. He was still watching her. Fool man. She hurriedly took down another of his shirts and began folding it.
"You never did explain to my satisfaction why you broke your oath," he said.
Swan froze, looking at the back wall of the tent, splayed with shadows of the still-hanging laundry. "I thought that you understood," she said, continuing to fold. "I had important information for the Aes Sedai in Saladar. Besides, I couldn't very well let Loghain run about free, now could I? I had to find him and get him to Saladar."
"Those are excuses," Bryn said.
"Oh, I know that they're true. But your Aes Sedai, you can cite 4 facts and use them to hide the real truth as effectively as another might use lies."
"So you claim I'm a liar?" she demanded.
"No," he said.
"Just an oath-breaker."
She glanced at him, eyes widening.
Why, she'd let him hear the rough side of—
She hesitated. He was watching her, bathed in the glow of the 2 lights, eyes thoughtful. Reserved, but not accusatory.
"That question drove me here, you know," he said. "It's why I hunted you all that way. It's why I finally swore to these rebel Aes Sedai, though I had little wish to be pulled into yet another war at Tar Valon. I did it all because I needed to understand. I had to know. Why? Why did the woman with those eyes, those passionate, haunting eyes, break her oath?"
"I told you I was going to return to you and fulfill that oath," Swan said, turning away from him and snapping a shirt in front of her to unwrinkle it.
"Another excuse," he said softly. "Another answer from an Aes Sedai. Will I ever have the full truth from you, Swan Sanchez? Has anyone ever had it?"
He sighed, and she heard papers rustle, the candle's light flickering in the faint stir of his movements as he turned back to his reports.
"When I was still unaccepted in the White Tower," Swan said softly, "I was one of 4 people present when a foretelling announced the imminent birth of the dragon reborn on the slopes of Dragonmount."
His rustling froze. "One of the 2 others present," Swan continued, "died on the spot. The other died soon after. I'm confident that she, the Armalyn Seat herself, was murdered by the Black Aja. Yes, it exists. If you tell anyone that I admitted that fact, I'll have your tongue. Anyway, before she died, the Armalyn sent Aes Sedai out hunting the dragon. One by one, those women vanished. The blacks must have tortured their names out of Tamra before killing her. She would not have given up those names easily. I still shiver sometimes thinking about what she must have gone through. Soon there were just the 2 of us left who knew, Warren and me. We weren't supposed to hear the foretelling. We were just accepted, in the room by happenstance. I believe that Tamra was somehow able to withhold our names from the blacks. For if she hadn't, we'd have undoubtedly been murdered like the others. That left 2 of us, the only 2 in all of the world who knew what was coming, at least the only 2 who served the light. And so I did what I had to do, Gareth Bryn. I dedicated my life to preparing for the dragon's coming. I swore to see us through the last battle, to do whatever was necessary, to bear the burden I had been given. There was only 1 other person I knew I could trust, and she is now dead." Swan turned, meeting his eyes across the tent. A breeze rippled the walls and fluttered the candle, but Bryn sat still, watching her.
"So you see, Gareth Bryn," she said, "I had to delay fulfilling my oath to you because of other oaths. I swore to see this through to the end, and the dragon has not yet met his destiny at Sheol Ghul. A person's oaths must follow their order of importance.
When I swore to you, I did not promise to serve you immediately. I was intentionally careful on that point. You will call it an Aes Sedai wordplay. I would call it something else.
Which is?
He asked. Doing what was necessary to protect you, your lands, and your people, Gareth Bryn. You blame me for the loss of a barn and some cows. Well, then I suggest that you consider the cost to your people should the Dragon Reborn fail. Sometimes prices must be paid so that a more important duty can be served. I would expect a soldier to understand that.
You should have told me, he said, still meeting her eyes. You should have explained who you were.
What? Swan asked. Would you have believed me? He hesitated. Besides, she said frankly, I didn't trust you. Our previous meeting had not been particularly amicable, as I recall. Could I have taken that risk, Gareth Bryn, on a man I did not know? Could I have given him control over the secrets I alone knew, secrets that needed to be passed on to the new Ammerlin seat? Should I have spared even a moment when the entire world was wearing the hangman's noose? She held those eyes, demanding an answer.
No, he finally admitted. Burn me, Swan, but no. You shouldn't have waited. You shouldn't have made that oath in the first place.
You should have been more careful to listen, she said, finally breaking his gaze with a sniff. I suggest that if you swear someone into service in the future, you be careful to stipulate a time frame for that service.
Bryn grunted, and Swan whipped the final shirt off of the drying line, causing it to shake, making a blurry shadow on the back wall of the tent.
Well, Bryn said, I told myself I'd only hold you to work as long as it took me to get that answer. Now I know. I would say that—
Stop! Swan snapped, spinning on him and pointing. But don't say it, she threatened. I'll gag you and leave you hanging in the air until sundown tomorrow. Don't think that I won't.
Bryn sat, silent.
I'm not finished with you yet, Gareth Bryn.
She whipped the shirt in her hands, then folded it.
I shall tell you when I am.
Light woman, he muttered almost under his breath. If I'd known you were Aes Sedai before chasing you to Saladar, if I'd known what I was doing—
What? She demanded. You wouldn't have hunted me down?
Of course I would have, he said indignantly. I'd have just been more careful and perhaps come better prepared. I went off hunting boars with a rabbit knife instead of a spear.
Swan set the folded shirt on top of the others, then picked up the stack. She gave him a suffering look. I will do my best to pretend that you didn't just compare me to a boar, Bryn. Kindly be a little more cautious with your tongue. Otherwise, you'll find yourself without a maidservant, and you'll have to let those ladies in the camp take up your laundry.
He gave her a bemused look. Then he just laughed. She failed at keeping her own grin to herself.
Well, after that exchange, he would know who was in control of this association. But Light, why had she told him about the foretelling? She'd rarely told anyone about that. As she packed the shirts in his trunk, she glanced at Bryn, who was still shaking his head and chuckling. When other oaths no longer have a hold on me, she thought, when I'm certain the Dragon Reborn is doing what he is supposed to, perhaps there will be time. For once I'm actually starting to look forward to being done with this quest. How remarkable.
You should be bedding down, Swan, Bryn said.
It's early yet, she said.
Yes, but it's sunset. Every third day you bed down uncharacteristically early, wearing that odd ring you have hidden between the cushions of your pallet.
He turned over a paper on his desk.
Please give my kind regards to the Ammerlin.
She turned toward him, slack-jawed. He couldn't know about Telairan Riod, could he? She caught him smiling in satisfaction. Well, perhaps he didn't know about Telairan Riod, but he'd obviously guessed that the ring and her schedule had something to do with communicating with Egwene. Sly? He glanced over the top of his papers at her as she passed, and his eyes had a twinkle to them. "Insufferable man," she muttered, sitting down on her pallet and dismissing her globe of light. Then she sheepishly fished out the ring Turangrial and put it around her neck, turned her back on him and lay down, trying to will herself to sleep. She made certain to rise early every third day so that she'd be tired at night. She wished she could put herself to sleep as easily as Egwene did. Insufferable, insufferable man! She'd have to do something to get back at him. Mice in the bedsheets. That would be a good payback. She lay for too long a time, but eventually coaxed herself to sleep, smiling faintly to herself at the prospect of an apt revenge. She awoke in Telairunriod wearing nothing but a scandalous, barely covering slip. She yelped, immediately replacing that, through concentration, with a green dress. Green? Why green? She made it blue. Light! How was it that Egwene was always so good at controlling things in Telairunriod, while Swan could barely keep her clothing from switching at every idle thought? It must have something to do with the fact that Swan had to wear this inferior Terangrial copy, which didn't work as well as the original. It made her look insubstantial to others who saw her. She was standing in the middle of the Aes Sedai camp, surrounded by tents. The flaps of any given structure would be open one moment, then closed the next. The sky was troubled by a violent yet strangely silent storm. Curious. But then things were often strange in Telairunriod. She closed her eyes, willing herself to appear in the study of the Mistress of Novices in the White Tower. When she opened her eyes, she was there, a small wood-paneled room with a stout desk and a table for strappings. She would have liked to have the original ring, but that was carefully kept by the sitters. She should be thankful for even a small catch, as her father had been fond of saying. She could have been left without any of the rings. The sitters thought this one had been with Lyanna when she'd been captured. Was Lyanna all right? At any moment the false Amyrlin could opt for execution. Swan knew all too well how spiteful Elida could be. She still felt a stab of sorrow when she thought of poor Alric. Had Elida felt a single moment of guilt over murdering a warder in cold blood before the woman she was tearing down had been properly deposed? "A sword, Swan?" Egwene's voice suddenly asked. "That's novel." Swan looked down, shocked to find herself holding a bloody sword, likely intended for Elida's heart. She made it vanish, then regarded Egwene. The girl looked the part of the Amyrlin, wearing that magnificent golden gown, her brown hair in an intricate arrangement set with pearls. Her face wasn't ageless yet, but Egwene was getting very good at the calm serenity of an Aes Sedai. In fact, she seemed to have grown measurably better at that since her capture. "You look well, Mother," Swan said. "Thank you," Egwene said with a faint smile. She showed more of herself around Swan than she did the others. They both knew how heavily Egwene had relied on Swan's teaching to get where she was. "Though she'd probably have made it there anyway," Swan admitted, "just not quite as quickly." Egwene glanced at the room around them, then grimaced faintly. "I realize I suggested this location last time, but I have seen enough of this room lately. I will meet you in the novices' dining hall." She vanished. An odd choice, but very unlikely to conceal unwanted ears. Swan and Egwene weren't the only ones who used Telairunriod for clandestine meetings. Swan closed her eyes. She didn't need to, but it seemed to help her, and imagined the novices' dining hall with its rows of benches and its bare walls. When she opened her eyes, she was there, as was Egwene. The Amyrlin settled back, and a majestic stuffed chair appeared behind her, catching her gracefully as she sat. Swan didn't trust herself to do anything so complicated. She simply sat down on one of the benches. "I think we may want to start meeting more frequently, Mother," Swan said, tapping the table as she ordered her thoughts. "Oh?" Egwene asked, sitting up straighter. "Has something happened?" "Several somethings," Swan said. and I'm afraid a few of them smell as ripe as last week's catch. Tell me. One of the Forsaken was in our camp, Swan said. She hadn't wanted to think about that too frequently. The knowledge made her skin crawl. Is anyone dead? Egwene asked, voice calm, though her eyes looked to be steel. No, bless the light, Swan said, other than those you already know about. Romanda made the connection. Egwene, the creature had been with us for some time in hiding. Who? Delana Mosalane, Swan said. Or her serving woman, Halima. Most likely Halima, as I've known Delana for a great long time. Egwene's eyes widened just faintly. Halima had waited on Egwene. Egwene had been touched and served by one of the Forsaken. She took the news well, like an Amarlin. But Anaya was killed by a man, Egwene said. Were those murders different? No. Anaya wasn't murdered by a man, but by a woman wielding Sidene. It must have been. It's the only thing that makes sense. Egwene nodded slowly. Anything was possible where the Dark One was concerned. Swan smiled in satisfaction and pride. This girl was learning to be Amarlin. Light, she was Amarlin. There's more? Egwene asked. Not much more on this topic, Swan said. They got away from us, unfortunately. Disappeared the very day we discovered them. What warned them, I wonder? Well, that involves one of the other things I need to tell you. Swan took a deep breath. The worst of it was out, but this next part wouldn't be much easier to stomach. There was a meeting of the hall that day, attended by Delana. In that meeting, Anashaman announced that he could sense a man channeling in the camp. We think that is what informed her. It wasn't until after Delana fled that we made the connection. It was that same Ashaman who told us that his fellow had encountered a woman who could channel Sidene. And why was an Ashaman in the camp? Egwene asked coolly. He'd been sent as an envoy, Swan explained. From the Dragon Reborn. Mother, it appears some of the men who follow Al'Thor have bonded Aes Sedai. Egwene blinked a single time. Yes, I had heard rumors of this. I had hoped that they were exaggerated. Did this Ashaman say who gave Rand permission to commit such an atrocity? He's the Dragon Reborn, Swan said, grimacing. I don't think he feels he needs permission. But in his defense, it appears he didn't know it was happening. The women his men bonded were sent by Elida to destroy the Black Tower. Yes, Egwene finally showed a sliver of emotion. So the rumors are accurate. All too accurate. Her beautiful dress retained its shape, but bled to a deep brown in color, like Aiel clothing. Egwene didn't seem to notice the change. Will Elida's reign of disasters never cease? Swan just shook her head. We've been offered 47 Ashaman to bond as restitution of sorts for the women Al'Thor's men bonded. Hardly a fair trade, but the Hall decided to accept the offer nonetheless. As well they should have, Egwene said. We shall have to deal with the dragon's foolishness at a later date. Perhaps his men acted without his direct orders, but Rand must take responsibility. Men. Bonding women. They claim Sidene is cleansed, Swan said. Egwene raised an eyebrow but did not object. Yes, she said. I suppose that might be a reasonable possibility. We will need further confirmation, of course. But the taint arrived when all seemed one. Why should it not leave when all seems to be approaching pure madness? I hadn't considered it that way, Swan said. Well, what should we do, Mother? Let the Hall deal with it, Egwene said. It seems they have matters in hand. They'd be better at keeping them in hand if you'd return, Mother. Eventually, Egwene said. She sat back and laced her fingers in her lap, somehow looking far older than her face would suggest. My work is here, for now. You'll have to see that the Hall does as it should. I have great faith in you. And it's appreciated, Mother, Swan said, keeping her frustration inside.
but I'm losing control of them. Lilaine has begun to set herself up as a second Amyrlin, and is doing it by pretending to support you. She's seen that appearing to act in your name serves herself. Egwene pursed her lips. I would have thought Romanda would take the advantage, considering that she discovered the Forsaken. I think she assumed she'd hold the advantage, Swan said, but she spent too long basking in her victory. Lilaine has, with no small effort, become the most devoted servant of the Amyrlin who has ever lived. You would think that you and she were the closest of confidants to hear her speak. She's appropriated me as her attendant, and each time the hall meets, it's, Egwene wanted this, and remember what Egwene said when we did that. Clever, Egwene said.
Brilliant, Swan said, sighing.
But we knew one of them was eventually going to claw her way ahead of the other. I keep diverting her toward Romanda, but I don't know how long I can keep her distracted.
Do your best, Egwene said. But don't worry if Lilaine refuses to be diverted.
Swan frowned. But she's usurping your place.
By building upon it, Egwene said, smiling. She finally noticed that her dress had changed to brown, for she switched it back in a heartbeat, not breaking the conversation. Lilaine's gambit will only succeed if I fail to return. She is using me as a source of authority. When I return, she'll have no choice but to accept my leadership. She'll have spent all of her effort building me up.
And if you don't return, Mother? Swan asked softly.
Then it will be better for the Aes Sedai to have a strong leader, Egwene said. If Lilaine has been the one to secure that strength, then so be it.
She has good reason to make certain you don't return, you know, Swan said. At the very least, she's betting against you.
Well, she can't very well be blamed for that.
Egwene let down her guard enough to show a grimace.
I'd be tempted to bet against myself if I were on the outside. You'll simply have to deal with her, Swan. I can't let myself be distracted. Not when I see so much potential for success here, and not when there is an even greater price for failure.
Swan knew that stubborn set to Egwene's jaw. There would be no persuading her tonight. Swan would simply have to try again during their next meeting.
All of it, the cleansing, the Ashaman, the crumbling of the tower, made her shiver uncomfortably. Though she'd been preparing for these days for most of her life, it was still unsettling to have them finally arrive.
The last battle really is coming, Swan said, mostly to herself.
It is, Egwene said, voice solemn.
And I'm going to face it with barely a lick of my former power, Swan said, grimacing.
Well, perhaps we can get you an Angreal once the tower is whole again, Egwene said. We'll be using everything we have when we ride against the shadow.
Swan smiled. That would be nice, but not necessary. I'm just grumbling out of habit, I suppose. I'm actually learning to deal with my new situation. It's not so difficult to stomach, now that I see that it has some advantages.
Egwene frowned, as if trying to figure out what advantages there could be in lessened power. Finally, she shook her head.
Elaine once mentioned a room to me in the tower filled with objects of power. I assume it really exists?
Of course, Swan said. The basement storeroom. It's in the second level of the basement, on the northeast side. Little room with a plain wooden door, but you can't miss it. It's the only one in the hallway that is locked.
Egwene nodded to herself. Well, I can't defeat Elida through brute force. Still, it is nice to know of that.
Is there anything else remarkable to report?
Not at the moment, Mother, Swan said.
Then return and get some sleep.
Egwene hesitated.
And next time, we'll meet in 2 days. Here in the novices' dining hall, though we may want to begin meeting out in the city. I don't trust this place. If there was a Forsaken in our camp, I'd bet half my father's inn that there's one spying on the White Tower, too.
Swan nodded.
Very well.
She closed her eyes and soon found herself blinking awake, back in Bryn's tent. The candle was out, and she could hear Bryn breathing quietly from his pallet on the other side of the tent. She sat up and looked across at him, though it was too dark to see anything more than shadows. Strangely, after talking about Forsaken and Ashaman, the sturdy general's presence comforted her.
"Is there anything else remarkable to report, Egwene?" Swan thought idly, rising to change out of her dress behind the screen and put on her sleeping gown.
"I think I might be in love.
Is that remarkable enough?"
To her it seemed stranger than the taint being cleansed or a woman channeling Sidene. Shaking her head, she tucked the dream Tirangrial back in its hiding place, then snuggled down beneath her blankets. She'd forego the mice. Just this once.